Taking Stock on Newstalk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
We're joined now by Martin Wolfe, Chief Economics Commentator with the Financial Times. Martin, you're very welcome and thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
You've written, Martin, that the US presidential election, the main day next week, but of course millions of people have already voted, is the most important general election since 1932 and the election of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Why so?
Well, essentially my argument is that this election could confirm, at least for some substantial time, a fundamental shift in America's view of the world and role of the world. Because if Donald Trump wins, it would confirm essentially America's repudiation of the role in the world that it took up in the middle of the 20th century and continued to play until Trump's election. That is, as the central democratic power, as the guarantor of a liberal economic and political order, and as the guarantor of stability in the world as a whole. This is what America did a century from the Second World War onwards through the Cold War and afterwards. And with Trump, with Mr. Trump, they essentially repudiated that. And if Mr. Trump is reelected, they will say, yeah, we like that. That's what we've done. He's done what he promised. And we like being outside the system. And that will be have very profound implications, in my view.
Do you believe that four more years of a Trump administration similar to the one we've just seen would shatter the world's view of the United States as a model of a competent and successful democracy, a view that I suppose has been strained quite a bit over the last 4 years?
Yes, I think it would. I think the obviously the views of America outside vary. It depends on who you are. But those people around the world who feel that they're committed to democracy, to freedom, to human rights, to international cooperation, to tackle major world problems like climate, like the pandemic, they would feel that America has turned their back, its back on them. And I think that would have very great implications. It will be seen by authoritarians as a vindication of their attitudes to politics and policy. It will be seen as a vindication by climate skeptics and people who are skeptical of all forms of multilateral cooperation. It would be seen as a vindication of people who are hostile to the European Union and what it stands for in terms of its own internal and external ambitions. So I think it would be definitive. I also think that America will do things. It will, I would guess, it will pull out of NATO. I expect it to pull out of the World Trade Organization and probably many other international organizations to pursue its strictly bilateral approach to foreign international relations that Mr. Trump prefers, generally to support autocrats and continue the hostility to democratic leaders he has shown. So I think it would be a confirmation, as it were, that this very, very different sort of America, nationalist, inward-looking, unilateralist, is the new American reality.
Couldn't it be argued, though, Martin, that this has happened in cycles right down through American modern American history, and that there's always been a very substantial cohort, sometimes the majority of the population and their leaders, who do look inwards rather than outwards, and that even Roosevelt, elected in the 1930s, had to contend with that very isolationist approach. And while he did commit to be the arsenal of democracy in late 1940, he only really got involved in the war when they were attacked themselves.
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right that unilateralism and isolationism are, for very obvious reasons of geography and security, traditional features of American life. Indeed, they were completely dominant in the 19th and early 20th centuries. So if you're looking at this very long period, then clearly it was a shift away from that. You are right also that though Roosevelt actually was already very actively engaged in supporting Britain during the Second World War before America entered, he couldn't actually enter. He couldn't get his country into the war until America was attacked. And many would argue he maneuvered the Japanese into attacking America. I'm not going to go into that, but that's obviously a widely shared view. However, I would argue that while this isolationist and unilateralist element in American policy has always been there, after Roosevelt, and particularly during the war, of course, the Second World War, and then the Cold War, and afterwards, the reality is that the presidency was in the hands of people who had very different views of how precisely to engage, but who are all internationally engaged. They saw themselves as leaders of the free world, constantly used phrase by Americans. They not infrequently were committed to promoting democracy, to promoting development. Pretty well all the major international institutions we've been talking about were either created directly by American presidents or were given strong American support, the European Union, for example. And of course, America got involved, in my view, tragically, in many international wars, hardly isolationism. I think that was a great mistake. But the bottom line is that all American presidents up to Mr. Trump from FDR were basically committed, for pretty obvious reasons, given the lessons of the Second World War, that they couldn't be isolated, to the idea that the United States was an engaged power, a committed power with clear objectives in the world and values that it was promoting and interests it was promoting. Mr. Trump very clearly repudiates this. I don't think there's actually ever been a president like Mr. Trump, but his attitudes and values are very much more those of the 19th century than really of any American president, even since Woodrow Wilson.
Our guest here on News Talk is Martin Wolf, chief economics commentator with the Financial Times. Are we perhaps taking too Eurocentric a view of what's happening over there? And if, as you write, he has run a corrupt, malevolent and incompetent government, why are so many people perhaps prepared to put him in a second time?
I think that's a very interesting question, and I'm writing a whole book which, to some significant extent, bears on this. I mean, some of the things that Mr. Trump has been allowed to get away with have genuinely surprised me, and I'm not easily surprised, and I wouldn't consider myself really all that Eurocentric in this way. I actually lived for 10 years in America, so I know the country moderately well. For example, the fact that it has been completely accepted that he should run his business while president, and that he should run the presidency in such a way as to benefit his business. I mean, it's completely obvious. To the tune of many millions, that's perfectly clear, would have been regarded 10 years ago on both sides as simply unthinkable. It's not what senior public servants in the United States would contemplate doing. They understood, well, they profess to understand very clearly that if you hold public office, you should not make large private gains out of it. So it's really quite shocking that this has become accepted and quite normal. It's quite extraordinary, I mean, truly extraordinary, that in his campaigns and subsequently in the presidency, he has called, you know, without evidence or anything else, that Hillary Clinton should be locked up. End of story. I mean, that's a sort of threat you don't make in a normal democracy. So clearly, this is a transgressive presidency in the normal sense. The values that he puts forward are not those which one historically associated with American national politics, and certainly in the modern era. Now, the question you ask is, why has this been so acceptable to American people? My own view is that going back over a long period, I trace it back to the 80s and perhaps even earlier, American public life on both sides, actually, I think, though somewhat more on the Republicans, but on both sides, basically developed and promoted an economic system and with it a social system, which did great damage to very large numbers of ordinary people in America, made them very, very angry and very desperate. We have many signs of this, including the decline in life expectancy of significant parts of the white working class. Well, actually, not just those white people who didn't go to university, which is really rather shocking. Now, this made people very angry, and political forces, which I can't go into in detail in the time we have, basically responded by emphasizing the already very powerful cultural splits in America, splits in terms of values, and let's be blunt about it, splits in terms of race. An important element of that, of course, was the shift of the South from being supporting the Democrats to supporting the Republicans as a direct and obvious consequence of the civil rights legislation of the 60s. So race and culture became absolutely salient division points. And in addition, Mr. Trump came along and said to many of the people who'd suffered in this period, well, it's all because of free trade, interestingly, principally promoted by the Republicans. And I'm against that. I won't do anything else for you. Nothing. But I hate foreigners. Foreigners are the problem. So I'm going to have a trade policy which is quite different from the Republicans' traditional one. So Mr. Trump came along basically offering really to fight the cultural war, made a central element of his presidency as it is today, plus protectionism. I think that's the core of his appeal and his endless war on the cultural enemies. And I think that's the way American politics have gone. There are reasons that this seemed attractive to people on the Republican side and in opposite ways the Democratic side, and I think it's been a total disaster. So the result is American politics has a profound, fraught cultural element in it now, which is basically creating hatred of them, extreme form, which is built on and closely related to, but not the same thing as, economic, profound economic disappointment in a country in which inequality has risen enormously. That's a long answer to your question, but I don't think Trump is an accident at all. Indeed, I indicated that in my column, and that's one of the tragedies. He's not going to solve anything for the unhappy people, but he is their standard bearer. And that's why, if he's reelected, which is perfectly possible in my view, we would have to say, okay, America's a different country now.
But given that very elaborate context that you outlined there, Martin, regardless of Donald Trump's own idiosyncratic personality elements and incompetence, as you put it, aren't those deep divisive lines already sketched now in American society? And regardless of who's in the White House, they're going to be a permanent feature. Even if Joe Biden wins, he could be paralyzed by not controlling Congress, or he could just be a transitional president, as he has hinted himself, to a more extreme form of the left, which would divide things further.
I think that the way I put it, and I think it is the correct way of putting it, is if Mr. Trump wins, we will know pretty well what America's like now. Not forever, nothing is forever, but for now. If Mr. Biden wins, that won't prove the opposite. I agree with you completely. Biden himself is obviously rather a centrist figure, and it's very interesting to me that the Democrats, in the end, I think as far as I can see, in sizable part because of Black American votes, African American votes, chose a very much a traditional centrist Democrat, somebody who likes bipartisanship, as it were, the antithesis of Donald Trump in the Democratic Party. But of course, the chances that he will be able to implement this sort of program successfully are not that great because, as you rightly note, America is so passionately, deeply, and dangerously divided. So the way I would put it is if Mr. Trump wins, we have this huge problem in the world of an America we will not be able to cooperate with. For example, it will make it completely impossible to solve the climate problem. To give one example, it will be over, in my view. But if Mr. Biden wins, that doesn't in any way guarantee the opposite. It merely indicates that the opposite has a chance. And we would have to see how politics unfolds over the next 4 and then 8 and 12 and many more years to see where America finally settles. Because as you observe, America is now a deeply divided country, and the divisions are not over policy, they're over identity in the most profound way. And those are not the sorts of issues that can be resolved or compromised over in normal politics. I think, from my understanding, that people in Ireland would understand what I'm saying very well.
On that sobering note, we leave it there. My thanks to Martin Wolf, Chief Economics Commentator with the Financial Times. Martin, thank you indeed for joining us.
Pleasure.
Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.